Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Really, 007.
So yes, the stunts of the Daniel Craig James Bond era. And of course, it does seem that that has now come to an end. That isn't a spoiler, just in case you haven't seen that.
In case you haven't seen it.
But it started with a bang in Casino Royale. And I've got to say, we've done the review of Casino Royale and the stunts from start to finish, really, are very impressive. And I think a lot of that is to do with Martin Campbell wanting that. Of course, the Bond producers wanted to create a Bond, in inverted commas, who looked like they were doing the stunts, who looked like they could beat people up. And, you know, Pierce perhaps doesn't get enough credit for that because I thought he looked nifty in a fight. I think the more on about the sort of the Roger Moore, you know, just in A View to a Kill, really. I mean, other than that, I don't think there's very many cases of where you look, think, oh, yes, I just can't believe that it's him doing them.
I always feel that, you know, you go in generations. So, I mean, Roger's a great example of someone who doesn't need to do it and doesn't want to do it and realizes that there are stunt guys to do it. Timothy does action, you know, to a point. Of course, he's actually on the roof of that truck or he's on the bonnet of the truck, so he's doing all of that. And Pierce does, again, as much action as is necessary. But we've now moved to a slightly different area. Yes, new director in, you know, Martin Campbell back again. Different angle because it's Bond at the start of his career, but also different stunt coordinator. Now you've got Gary Powell in. And Gary, his instructions from early on, even on those location recces, was to say, you know, this is absolutely essential that we make him as groundbreaking as we possibly can. We need to see him doing the job. I think there are a couple of standout moments here, which, and Gary's a great example of this, where taking something and that whole idea of doing it for real is really his mantra. They've looked at it and they've done it in the past for real because they've not had an alternative but to do it for real. Well, he could, there is an option for CGI, you know, here in certain cases. But Gary and the producers and the director have said, no, we'll do this for real. So that opening sequence where, you know, you have, apart from the fight, which is a very real fight, when was that, you know, you'd never see Roger Moore have a fight like that. You'd never see Pierce probably have a fight like that. That's a very different type of fight. Then to get to the free running sequence, you know, you cast Sebastian Forcar as the character who is the guy who invented free running as we understand it. I don't know if anybody of you you may have seen a documentary on Channel 4 called Jump London. That was a wonderful example of Sebastian and his team free running and something that we've never seen before. Well, on the strength of that, this is where this came from. And they realized that, well, if he can do it, then Bond has to be able to do it as well. To a point, he has to do it slightly differently. An example of which is where Sebastian runs along and then jumps up and dives through the top of the doorway or the window or the doorway or whatever it is. Daniel comes along and crashes through the wall, you know. So it still needs to be him doing physical stuff. The amount of work that's done there, the extraordinary doubling to find Ben Cook and Kai Martin. Ben Cook and Kai Martin are two extraordinary doubles. There are moments again where the two of them are used in close-up on this, jumping from the building to the scissor lift that then drops down to the ground, sliding along the floor and dropping down through the hole in the floor, jumping from one side of the lift shaft to the other. I mean, this is magnificent moments, all done for real. Again, with all of these moments in these pictures, there are certain moments which are sold to the public. The action is sold to the public in the trailer. Jumping from the crane, the bungee jump in GoldenEye, you know, skiing off the cliff. The jump from the crane in this movie was one of those things which was sold in the edit and sold in the trailer. And that was a very complicated thing to do. And also meant that you had Ben Cook doing the jump for Bond. You also then had Adam Curley, who was then doing the jump for Sebastian Fourcade, because the double that they had, Marvin Campbell, who had been doubling him for a large proportion of the chase in those moments where he wasn't able to do or shouldn't be able to do the stuff he was doing, he got injured. Twisted his ankle quite badly. And of course, when you're looking at a job like this, you're on a harness attached to a crane cable, and you have to physically push off to get away from and land on the next one to then jump down onto the ground. And so he wasn't able to do this, and Adam Curley has stepped up and done it. And it's no mean feat to be 200 feet in the air. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though you've got a wire attached to you, you still have to, you know, you've got to have the balls to be able to do it. And they did. And I think it still stands up as probably one of the great action sequences in cinema, in a Bond movie. You know, it really does stand up as a spectacular piece of work.
The shots by Martin Campbell as well. You know, the sort of, you can see the height and the way the camera's moving across it all. If it was in less capable hands, they could, you know, you could easily not sell it as much as it sold. I think
he's a very clever director. He's already proved you know, how good he is with action, how excited he gets by the whole thing about getting the, particularly when it's a pumped up action sequence. You know, three, two, one, and he's shouting at people, go, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it's important to him, and it's important that he gets the right results to get that on screen. So that opening sequence kind of set the bar at right. This guy playing Bond is a bit different. We've not seen this before, and it's special. The next major moment, I suppose, in that is the stairwell fight, which is unquestionably one of the most brutal fights, again, possibly in cinema. You know, it's outside of the genre of just a basic fight in a Bond movie. You've never seen this, but, you know, Bond bleeds quite a bit in this. He's hacked to bits with a blade and punches, and again, the doubling is exceptional. Absolutely exceptional, but only if it's edited correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's edited very, very well, so you get a moment of the double, and then to sell the gag, and then you get the actor. I think it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Without jumping the gun, point's proven in the next film, isn't it, John? Where you've got all the good stuff, and yet you can't see them very well because of how badly it's edited.
Yeah. That's the problem, I think, with a lot of those. You know, because obviously, you know, the ending of Casino runs into the start of Quantum, but you've got a number of things that have happened in the meantime, because obviously it's a couple of years down the line. They've had a change of vehicle for a start off. It's not the same vehicle. They've had a change of costume designer. It's no longer Brioni. It's now Tom Ford. Yeah. You know, they've had a number of different bits and pieces and changed it along the way. So you have to try and sell the action, which then takes that away from those little, you know, you don't want to worry too much about the fact, well, even though there are people going, yeah, that's not the same suit he had on at the end of that movie. It's supposed to be set an hour later, you know, all that sort of stuff, which does go through people's minds. But I think the ferocity of the action in the Gary Powell coordinated movies kind of makes up for moments in some of them where the plot has left on an earlier bus, leaving the audience to go, not quite sure what's going on here, but this looks like it might be exciting. And it then carries on that little bit further. Now, that opening car chase in Quantum is a very good example of that, where it does, I think it's fabulous. I mean, it's a really, that, and oh, the editing's too quick. No, it's not. The editing's magnificent. If you're in that moment, you want to see those impacts and bang, and then this and cut and here.
It's loud as well, isn't it?
It's loud. It's noisy. It's engine noise. It's also
someone was probably hurt, though, weren't they? Someone nearly died.
Yeah, the one of the trucks was being, or he was a passenger of one of the trucks in point of. Oh no, I beg your pardon. The truck was being driven, and he was driving one of the Alphas. That's right. One of the Alfa Romeos. One of the interesting points that somebody else, might have been a motoring journalist, who mentioned and said, you realise, of course, that the chase is a complete pointless exercise. Bond is driving an Aston Martin. Everybody else is chasing him in Alfa Romeos. Now, within 5 seconds of this chase, all the Alphas will be parked up with their bonnets up at the side of the road because something will have gone wrong with them, because that's always what happens with an Alpha. And yet, you know, they're standing with them shot for shot. The guy was a British stunt performer of a Greek descent called Aris Kominos, who was one of the guys driving. And it was a case where it was a pull out at the last moment, and then the truck, you're confronted with it, and they are to drive and go head on into the truck. And for whatever reason, whether it was the seatbelt system that was in there, or I don't know the full details of it, but certainly he was shunted forward in such a way where he had to be airlifted. He's absolutely fine now, but at the time there was a serious concern. For, I mean, it had been that chase sequence, that opening sequence had been. A lot of issues had gone on. They'd lost the car in the lake at one time, if you remember. Some guy had to come out with another Aston, or because they'd got one hero car and a number of stunt action cars, but they hadn't got another hero car, and consequently they had to get another one flown out, because as it was being brought onto from a pontoon onto the side, it dropped off into the water. So it's, whether it's still currently sitting at the bottom of Lake Garda or not, I don't know. But they had, a number of issues with the production. But the action scene itself, I think, is phenomenal. And those, it resorts back to a terrific moment at the end of the chase, where he's rummaging for the machine gun, and he finally pulls the machine gun out and blasts the car with it, which then just drives off the edge of the cliff. And again, silence. Yep. That moment of silence as the car just crashes and he drives very casually into Siena, you know. There are some lovely moments in that. I think it's a very, very impressive moment. There's also that terrific fight between Mitchell and Bond. Again, possibly running a little long, and I don't think there's enough dialogue or construction as far as the script is concerned to warrant that amount of action, but...
Jumps are good, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they've cast a stuntman. Glenn Foster is a stuntman who's been cast in the role as Mitchell. And obviously this was taken, that your role is going to be very physical. So you are going to have to be a chase sequence. And a guy who is now possibly one of the best known stunt people around, Bobby Holland Hampton, that was his first movie. And his first job is to double Daniel Craig. And you go, wow, what a way to start, you know? Now he's Chris Hemsworth double. On all of the Avengers pictures, every, you know, you name it, he's the double. This is his first picture, and jumping from the roofs and that incredible fight in the I never know what it is. It's a little building site. Is it a building? They're constructing something, aren't they? And they fall through the glass roof. Of course, they CG the fall through the glass roof. Kai Martin then takes over to do the remainder of the physical swinging on the ropes and all that sort of stuff. And I thought that would be a great way to maybe end the pre-title sequence.
And you shoot into the...
Bang! And fires up into the screen.
Definitely.
So I think there's a lot of moments in that which are terrific. The plane stuff's very impressive, but again, a great deal of the physical flying is very good. But
it wasn't
just
CGI. I know people think it might be, but it wasn't. It was a proper,
it was wind tunnel.
Yeah,
they wind did. Tunnel there's a place in Milton Keynes, I think. Skydivers can go there, or even if you're not a skydiver, but often skydivers will go there if the conditions are wrong elsewhere, and you can rehearse body shape and understand control of, they fire air at you, and you can hover. You can float to find those positions that are better for you. And so they filmed a lot of the two. Daniel Craig was there, and I know that Olga Kurylenko was also there as well. So they were doing those sort of, particularly for those close-up dialogue shouty scenes, that was done that was done there.
You were them in no time today.
You know? So, yes. Take my hand! All of that sort of shouty stuff yeah. they were doing. So that was all done there. Yeah. And then the physical stuff. Yeah. And the boat chase, of course. A boat chase is one of my favourite things in Puerto Rico. They yeah. brought Simon Crane back in to direct that. And again, you know, had some serious talent. Wade Eastwood was back in doubling for Daniel because of his experience in boats, really, I think, more than anything else. And a lot of action on that and a lot of physical action as well. Boats running into boats at speed. Dragging boats away, guys flying through the air. I mean, it's a very physical sort of stuff, but it needed more story, didn't it? I mean, it didn't have an ending. It did. There was a lot of stuff going on. Yeah, there was a writer's strike.
Coda, wasn't it?
There was a writer's just strike. Me. There was an actor's strike.
Yeah, was, yeah. You know. There was like a 2-hour edit of it. I know we can't believe you're saying you want the Daniel Craig Bond film to be longer, but I think for this one, it would have, if there was more story to it, that
and
sort of
yet,
glued it together.
And as a point to that, I will say, even though, you know, all right, it needs work here, it needs work there, it hasn't got an ending, it's missing a big piece of plot here, it's hugely entertaining. Yeah. I can sit down, I can put it on, I can go, right, and 90 minutes later, I'm done, you know? I mean, it's a fly-through picture, and I think it's a very, from an action point of view, I think it's terrific, it's very, very good.
I've somehow become the sort of voice for Quantum of Solace. I can't believe it. Honestly, until I'd revisited it a couple of years ago, I was just so down on it, and I'd maybe seen it 2 or 3 times, and I was just so depressed with everything.
Yeah.
And Skyfall felt a bit more traditional, so I was uplifted by that. But
Skyfall's almost the independent movie that's in between the rest, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's another one-off, but I don't know, Quantum, since revisiting it, it just felt more like the older Bonds in terms of the globe-trotting and the stylistic. I like the look of it. I think the shots are beautiful, the locations are beautiful.
Yeah. It does look good.
And I know those are only secondary things. You know, the story should be the main thing, and it's neither here nor there. Sometimes you think it's too complicated to understand the motives, but it's also not fully fleshed enough to sort of give it a real Bond must save the world quickly kind of thing.
Quickly, is the evidence there. Because
yeah, quickly is it, yeah.
Just when you think, they're on the plane and we're going to have some dialogue now, and there's a dogfight happens out of nowhere. You go, wait a minute. Yeah. Almost mid-sentence, she's about to tell him something, and then bum, 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 ba, dum, boom, the plane comes crashing through. Sure. You know. Oh, okay. Yeah. If I put it in my my list of films that I'll watch more often, it's in the top 15, I would have thought, certainly, to go back and what a Bond film, certainly. I'll go back and watch it quite often. I think it's quite entertaining. I like
lower
it a lot.
You. It's lower for John Kell, I think.
I don't too much of a dissenting voice because, you know, we've never been so positive about Quantum of Solace on a podcast.
it's mainly me.
Do you feel weird?
I feel like I'm just an observer. And as opposed to me countering it, I'm just going to just enjoy you guys finding some enjoyment in that film.
Right, okay. Well, that seems fair.
You were more positive about Skyfall than the rest of us when we did the review.
I think Skyfall is a really good film. I'm a massive fan of Casino Royale. I think Casino Royale is an exceptional film. And I don't have a problem with the way Craig plays Bond in it either. I think it's great in what he does. I think if you compare the Casino Royale Bond to the No Time to Die Bond, I think they're absolute poles apart from each other.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there is no consistency in that. We've gone to this vulnerable, I don't know what we've gone to now. Skyfall's like the happy medium between the two, I'd say, really, in a lot of ways, in terms of there is quite a lot of that vulnerable emotional side in it, but there is the duty for the country in there as well. And even though it completely subverts so many formulas and expectations of Bond to the point that actually it's the only mission that he fails, it still weirdly feels more Bondian than the rest of them, arguably Casino Royale. That's my fault. Anyway, sorry.
The stunts though.
And now the weather with Fatima.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Yeah.
Tangent there.
On that note, I think.
Well, the pre-title sequences are. We discussed it on the review. It is pretty good. I think it is pretty strong, and I like the stuff on the motorbikes going into the market. But the train, we felt. I like the digger. And all that stuff. That's
great.
But we just sort of
Digger was very Bond.
It's just not as good as Octopussy. It's just not as well shot.
I'm not disputing that. I think they, to be fair, they are two very different train sequences.
I just mean whether on top, you know, the fight.
The train in Octopussy.
The Govinda fight was better, I think.
The train in Octopussy is more of a character, I think, than the train in Skyfall. Although, and again, looking at it from an action perspective, but the stuff that they're doing on top of that train, they would never have done in Octopussy for real. You know, as we saw, that's a lot of backdrop going on if you've got the two actors there. Well, you've got the two actors on top of this train, and that train's really shifting. You know, it's doing 40 miles an hour, if not a little quicker.
The shots, though. Sam Mendes' shots are too quick. There isn't enough time spent on an individual punch. It's a bit like the... You know, the jellyfish, the hologram thing in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
It might look nice, but really, what we don't really know an awful lot about what's going on, do we?
I think that the style of fighting has changed because you've got... it is, you know, you've got Andy Lister doubling Bond and Damien Walters doubling the villain on the top of the train. And they've developed this style, which is sort of martial artsy based and some physical type of, you know, taekwondo and, you know, also a kind of pub brawl type thing. And the whole thing's brought together where you've got a mass of different types of styles, which kind of works there, I think, in that type of scenario. You know, the whole thing itself, I think it's from the motorcycles on to the train, I think works very well. Of course, you've got the believability of the whole thing. I am right on top of the character the whole time when I believe this Bond can do it all. He's on top of the train. He's chased it. He's got on top of this. Now he's found the zone. So he's on the... Yep. And he's fighting the guy. And then he gets shot because, you know, Emma said, take the shot. And he falls 9,000 feet.
it's
and lands in 7 feet of water.
Yeah.
And then is saved by a mermaid.
He's saved by a sock.
Very confused by what's going on here. Well, you've got me to the point where this bloke can do no wrong. And then you've sold me a Disney ending.
Sorry, John, just to bring that in. Saved by a mermaid, inspired by Hook, greatest film of all time. No, I'm only joking.
It is, no, that is true.
But it just, for that moment, I mean, the technicalities of the leaving the train. Now, bear in mind that Andy Lister is wired. He is on a wire, and but he's still got to go off that train. Yeah. And I don't know how, that's, you know, 400 feet probably over the top of that thing. He'll go out probably 70-80 feet, down about 70 or 80 feet before he stopped and then winched back. But that's some serious maneuver to do that. And part of the fall is real, and then of course the rest of it is a CG. Although the underwater sequence as he's falling into the sand is done back at the studio and is Kai Martin. So he does that at the indoor tank there.
You get that underwater fight that Matthew always saying it's in a pond, you know. It's good, but it just doesn't look real.
Oh, towards the end, the underwater.
You feel like it's been done on an underwater soundstage. Or
which it has,
Again, it's shot as in the shots are nice and you can see everything clearly. And it cinematically might be literate or whatever, but
cinematically better. Those occasions where, you know, you think, wow, this is the North Sea, people are having a fight in the North Sea, and you can see 150 yards. You can't see six inches in front of yourself.
Absolutely.
Because they've gone to the Bahamas to film it. That's why, because the water's better, you know. So a similar sort of exercise there. Gary Powell directed that whole unit for the underwater fight as well, incidentally, not just coordinating it. But I think it's got many, many fabulous... I mean, the tube sequence... You know,
I don't want to be too down on it.
It's got lots of great stuff.
I do rate a lot of the action.
Bringing in all the stunt guys. Again, this was another touch brought on by Gary, was that 2012 was the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can bring back as many other stunt people who worked on all the other Bond movies to have them in the picture. Oh, okay, that's a good idea. So on the escalator, I don't know whether you've spotted on the escalator going up, Bond is sliding down. There's Greg Powell on there, who's Gary's brother, who's going up. You've got Rocky was in one of the cars as Bond is running down Whitehall. Paul Weston's in another car, and they've got other people all over the place. They brought people in left, right, and centre to say, look, let's try and get as many folk in as we can.
Brilliant.
So, I think it's got a great deal going for it, Skyfall. I've been a fan of it, I must admit. And I do go back to it again quite often. It is, it's the great, I think it's a nice in-between movie, you know. There's a connection between the first two and there's a connection between the last two. And I kind of take Skyfall at face value.
Yeah.
That independent film, you know what I mean?
The retconny, isn't it? We keep going of Spectre, trying to tie them together. That isn't Skyfall's fault.
No, it's not.
Well, I know Sam Mendes is involved, you know, the same people, the writers and everything, but it shouldn't take away the sort of Silver is an independent villain for that film.
Yes, I think so. I mean, even Sam Mendes didn't want to direct Spectre. You know, he had to be coerced into it. He didn't want to do it.
Recurring theme, isn't it?
Well, it is, you know.
Coercing people back into
it. Doesn't you work out very well, does it?
No,
it's very confusing.
But away, they don't need to be asked twice, do they?
No, not at all. And also, I know we've gone by it already, but I just wanted to make a special point there with reference to that motorcycle sequence. Again, bringing professionals in, lots of terrific motorcyclists, Lee Morrison being one of them, who doubles the villain on the motorcycle chase. But Robbie Madison brought in to double Daniel Craig for that sequence. And I think it's a magnificent motorcycle sequence. I was always also very happy with the way it looked from this is the first time Bond's used face replacement in this, you know, it had been used horribly before on a number of other pictures. Even though I knew it wasn't Daniel Craig, I was perfectly happy with the idea that was Craig's face riding that motorcycle. I had no problem with it. You look at it now, it's only, you know, it's not that long ago. It's only 10 years back, and you look at it and go, it's a bit suspect, isn't it? But at the time, it was cutting edge, you know?
Do you think they've improved that for the... I know it was Lee Morrison again, wasn't it, in the Matera?
Yeah, I mean, they've moved on no end, technology-wise anyway, certainly from that perspective. They can get so detailed now. But at the time, you know, 2012, that was revolutionary. So I thought that was a great moment as far as that was concerned. So Skyfall, for me, I have, you know, it's great fun. And there's lots of terrific action in it as well.
Good. Well, on to Spectre, which, again, I saw it again quite recently. And I'm like, you know what?
All right.
It ain't half bad, this. It ain't half bad. And
at all.
There's bits you do differently, and there's storylines that... perhaps don't go where you want them to go. And I could lose the whole, you know, C plot with the, you know, because CCTV and all that's a bit boring, isn't it? But, there's a lot in there. It's just have Blofeld as the background villain. It was good to introduce him. I thought that was really well done. But then just forgetting, we don't need to see him. He could just leave. We don't need to see him being...
No, the idea that all these different villains can be working for an organization. That's okay. I don't need to know what that organization is. You and I both know what that organization is, and we all know, but we don't need to be told about it. We can keep going, you know.
That's it. Go, don't tell.
I think now knowing that Daniel was practically in a wheelchair for a percentage of this opening sequence, where he's having to walk out casually from the hotel room and all that sort of stuff. He's got a big strapping on his leg and a cage or whatever the hell he had on his leg, which they CG'd out, you know?
Yeah.
And for me personally, I think the pre-title is brilliant.
I agree.
Really, really fabulous.
It is very good.
I think it's a spectacular pre-title. I think that the amount of work that's gone into that and it's got, you know, we were talking earlier about balance and we were talking about humour.
It's got humour in it, yeah.
It's got it there, you know, it's those that where he falls off the thing and lands on the sofa and he's got the...
Yeah.
Whatever the hell he's got in his hand. Is it a door handle he's got in his hand? Or a lamp? It's a lamp. He's hanging on to it and he goes, and just throws it over his shoulder. You know, little moments like that you need to bring this character back to what we expected before. I also think, and again, Gary Powell very, very... He's a genius, he really is, at looking at stuff and doing it for real. But he's also very aware of his own capabilities. He's this extraordinary stunt coordinator, but as a fight man, he knows that the world is changing. The style of fights are changing. So he brings in a guy called Olivier Schneider, who will be familiar to many, of course, as the guy who was responsible for the fights in Taken, if you've ever seen Taken with Liam Neeson, who has a particular set of skills. Well, those quick, not so much extravagant fights, but disarming your opponent in minimal movement, but enough to get that shot in the edit and it speeds the process up. Olivier is very good at that, and he brings a guy with him called Patrick Vaux, who is his assistant and fighter ranger, and they do a sensational job in this picture, creating that, you know, you ever try to have a fight inside a helicopter, it's not a lot of space,
yeah,
and yet you know they really make it work, and they do it so well by having, you know, a number of terrific doubles, James Embry, Gordon Alexander, Andy Lister hanging outside of the plane with Rob Cooper Nash, who's doubling, what's the guy's name, Sciara, who's the guy. And there's some amazing stuff going on. I also think that they tried to make up for the fact that that chopper in GoldenEye, even though it said it would loop the loop, never looped the loop, so they got to do it in this picture instead. I think that's possibly what happened. But again, the guy from Red Bull there was spectacular doing his flying. So I love that pre-title. I think it's brilliant. The helicopter sequence is amazing. The car chase, for me, is, oh, I don't know, I can't even explain it.
There's humour in it, though.
Yeah.
I don't mind the airbag.
I don't mind the humour in it. I don't mind the dialogue in it. The fact that he's having a conversation with a woman who's checking her fridge, you know. So that, okay, fair enough, I'm prepared to do that. I just thought that as car chases go, and as Bond movie car chases go, it needed to be, you know, its game needed to be upped. And on the basis that I think they've taken the two supercars and they've said, we're in Vatican City. Nobody's ever done a car chase in Vatican City before, so let's go and do that. And maybe they were not as focused on, you know, blowing stuff up or throwing cars through the air or that sort of stuff that might have given it that extra edge for Moneypenny to be saying, what was that? And for Bond to sort of just, oh, no, don't worry about it. That was just, you know, something. He can quip and do a few bits and pieces. I don't know. I think it left a bit to be desired, if the truth be known.
I mean, it's not as exciting as the, you know, another similar car chase in a glorious ancient city.
No. Oh, no, yes, yes. Patience.
Tom Hanks in The Da Vinci Code.
Oh, of course, yes. I'd forgotten about that.
My wife...
It goes reverse for about 10 metres. It's amazing.
My wife used to live in Matera, and I didn't realise it.
What?
When did she announce this?
I'll tell you about this later, sorry. Apologies.
She announced this about 45 minutes ago. Incidentally, darling, did you know?
She announced it when we watched it the other week. And I didn't know that.
One of the most beautiful places you've ever seen.
My wife's half Italian, and she used to live in Bari.
Which half?
Sorry.
Oh. Which half?
Not the better half.
Ah, okay, right.
Yeah, very good.
And you're still married. That's the main thing. There's a message here for everybody, folks, from a relationship perspective. It doesn't matter what happens in life. There are going to be stumbling blocks. But, you know, John's been confronted by a major turning point here. And yet, they're still happy. They're still going on. It's not a problem. This is good news.
Well, to quote...
Are you making a joke on Barry Town?
To quote Daniel Craig, we all have our secrets. I just haven't...
yes.
Just didn't get to yours yet.
Yet.
Oh, it's a nice job. Yeah. No, I want to hear more about that.
I think I heard something about Da Vinci Code, and in my head, I heard The Passion of the Christ, which is filled at Matera.
Oh, yeah.
Good
link. I am sorry. That is
no.
What my link was. I apologise.
I see where you were going with that. That's fair enough.
My thing with the Spectre car chase, because I love the helicopter, and the helicopter's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
My issue with it is actually the talking. On the basis that when you're doing a car chase, make the car chase the focal point. Don't use it as exposition as well, which they did by getting the whole Mr. White, and that takes the tension off it. Now, I agree, there's not many stunts in it. It's high-speed driving, and there's not many bangs and all the rest of it. But you don't know that anyway, because you're actually just hearing about Mr. White while they're driving. And to me, that distracts it. That's my main issue with the scene.
Yeah, no, I see that. I would think that, you know, if you're going to have a car chase, let's have a car chase. You know, if you want to have additional dialogue based around plot, then find somewhere else to have it, as opposed to have it during the chase, unless it's absolutely necessary. And this clearly wasn't, but it was just a case of maybe filling it out, which was a shame. But you know, they again, the team that they brought in are those individuals who are very proficient at being able to drive sideways at speed, like Mark Higgins and Ben Collins and Martin Ivanov doing a sensational job. There's a lot of chases in this movie. There's a foot chase, there's a helicopter thing, there's a car chase, and there's a plane chase with cars. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of chasing going on, right?
The plane chase with cars, I find a very frustrating chase. I really do. I feel the potential could be so much. And
it could have been scary.
The beginning of Commando, isn't it? You know, when he's going down, he's going in the car and they're coming, doing the shortcut.
That's right. The engine's been ripped out of the car.
Yeah.
Freewheeling. Yeah. I mean, you know, if there was ever an option to go, right, let's have Daniel skiing. We haven't done him skiing. Let's have him skiing in this one. You know, where else would you do it? Let's get that done. So that's a shame. It's, you know, I don't really, there's a few moments along the way which I have plot issues with and various other bits and pieces, but I could probably watch that pre-title and then, when the titles kick on, then I'll go back and watch the pre-title again. It's great fun. I mean, it is.
That's obviously the song, is it?
The song's dreadful. I mean, there have been the problem that, and they've had this for a long time. And I will point out, I know we scooted over, we did Quantum and scooted over it. I absolutely adore Another Way to Die. It's a magnificent theme. It's a brilliant guitar riff. It's a fantastic job done at short notice because obviously Amy Winehouse was going to do it and wasn't able to do it. So they, for Mr. White, ironically, Mr. White to then decide, you know, I've got an idea and go to Memphis and do it. And all right, maybe it shouldn't have been a duet is my only thing. But that driving is brilliant. So I absolutely love it. Skyfall, super tune. Well done. Makes no sense, but I still like it. Which she's talking about Sherry Trifle and various other bits and pieces. But it's a Oscar winning number. Okay, cool. Spectre, writing's on the wall. Just didn't get it. I still don't get it now. It's not a Bond theme because it's not driving me along. It's not getting me excited. It still won an Oscar for reasons better known to somebody else. So I don't understand it.
It's more pool these days, isn't it?
Yeah. And the current ones just won an Emmy. And you go, I'm not quite sure about that either. But anyway, we'll get to
Golden Globe.
Golden Globe, I meant that. Yeah. Spectre, all things considered, I don't have an issue, too much of an issue with it. I mean, there's a number of things going on. But action-wise, you know, you do the best with what you can. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we find out later on down the line that maybe there were additional bits and pieces that they should have done or were thinking about doing and never did. Maybe that would have benefited the picture. You don't know, you know. But I think what we do see in moments in that picture are pretty good. It's up there. I'm okay with it.
I like the different use of locations as well. You know, you've got the hot sort of heat of Mexico City, and then you're in the snow, aren't you? And then you're back in England, which is kind of in between. But it feels a bit more less parochial because some of the other ones, well, Skyfall, there's not an awful lot of well, the problem with the Shanghai is that we've said this before. You just don't really see much of Shanghai other than inside of buildings. You know, it would have been nice to sort of.
Because it was sold on that sequence with the lights, wasn't it? They discovered that area where the lights changed, and it was all visually they went, that's exciting.
Great,
and then they go and do the internal shot was that the airport there or not? I don't think so. Was it the real one? So yeah, that again, train fight, entertaining.
Yeah,
bit of comedy along the way. Yeah, good old fashioned fisticuffs with an oversized villain. You know, bring it back to those sort of Jaws type things. You know, that fight with Spy Who Loved Me, and then From Russia with Love. You've got the train fights there as well, or Live and Let Die to a point. So I think that worked pretty well. There's a couple of nice one liners on there as well. But I must admit, you know, and I think I may have said this before, but from a health and safety point of view, you only had to push against some of those items, and the whole bloody room fell apart. The carriage is just. It's dismantling itself every time you push against it. Crash, that's gone. The whole bar's collapsed. Everything's gone. Blimey, who finished this job? Who tipped who signed off on this? You know, because certainly the train carriage in From Russia with Love, way sturdier. No toys about that, you know. That was good old-fashioned engineering back then. You know?
Better that they do something different, isn't it? Because in From Russia with Love, it is so confined, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas with this, at least...
You move out of the carriage.
They're going around a bit and smashing into different areas of it. No, I know that one complaint is, where on earth has everyone gone? I suppose they scream off, don't they? But there's just no one.
You don't see them leave, but yeah,
no,
you're made to assume they've seen the fight kick off and they've gone back to
cleaning all the stuff,
everywhere else. But
it's good fight.
Good fun. It's a good fight. Doubles are great. You know, very, very good stuff for the doubles. So I don't Rob de Groot, who is Mr. Hink's double and has been for many moons, doubles him on all of his pictures, and very sturdy, very versatile. Not awful big, if the truth be known. You know, you put them together and you think, but it's filmed at such a way and such an angle that you go, oh, okay, this really works. So great job there as well, I think.
Right, well, no time to die. Here we go.
No time like the present to die.
Well, talking of just, I don't know, overkill of the trailers and everything and the promotional stuff, felt like we'd seen a lot of the Matera, you know, pre-title sequence, didn't we?
It did, really. The problem, I thought, was that you hadn't seen too much of the first part and you saw most of the second part, you know?
Yes.
But, again, change of crew members. So Lee Morrison, who's now been part of the Bond team for quite some time as a performer and as an assistant coordinator, is now the top dog with Olivier Schneider. And they come at these things slightly differently. Of course, they're going to do things slightly differently. The opening sequence in the ice and the snow, and it's done in, you know, I think the pre-title, this opening part of the pre-title is fabulous. It's never been, it's something I'd never associated with a Bond movie.
I agree.
Certainly something that I hadn't seen before, yeah. And I don't think many people had. And the amount of doubles that you need for this sequence is quite staggering. You've got inside the house when Safin comes in wearing his mask, doubled by a guy called Sebastian Suda, who is the guy who is shot and then falls off the top. Outside, he's doubled by another guy called Hasit Sadavani, who's British, and doubles him on the ice. But I think particular shout really needs to go to the two young girls who are doubling for young Madeline. And there's two of them, and the reason there's two of them is because of the actual conditions that they're filming in. Yes, they're wearing a wetsuit. Yes, they're wearing protective clothing. But you still can't be in that water for too long, because it is actually dangerous. Some of those shots were done as a studio shot, tank shot anyway. Majority of it is done on location. And so Christina...
Where was that done? Was it the Faroe Islands, was it?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
So you got Christina Petrou, Chelsea Mather are the two girls who are doing the physical doubling there, and I think they do a magnificent job. Yeah. And again, that moment under the ice, he's looking and then he fires... That's face replacement there. That's actually one of them underneath the water. And I think that's very, very clever indeed.
Right.
So they've done a great deal of work on that. And the timing has to be absolutely spectacular. You know, you can't mess about with it because you're working in temperatures that are lunacy. I mean, you know, they have to come out and you can only be in this in these temperatures for a short burst of time. You can only be in the water for 30 seconds, a minute, whatever it takes, then you've got to come out and then somebody else has got to replace you. So they were rotating it around themselves for a while. So great stuff there. And the rest of the stuff, of course, we saw in the trailer, really.
Yeah.
You know?
The jump on the bridge as well.
The jump from the bridge, David Grant doubling Daniel, jumping from the bridge. And it's obviously he's wired, he's grabbing onto the cable on the side. I also thought that the explosion at the graveside was pretty graphic as well. That's he's wearing a, again, we mentioned it earlier, a ratchet, which ratchets him out of the way. The explosion goes off and he's forced backwards. And that's pretty violent and looks very violent too. But so it captures all of that beautifully. So that's very good. And of course, they split the doubles. So you've got David Grant and then you've got, on the motorcycle, you've got Paul Edmondson, who is a wonderful world champion motorcyclist. He does all of the stuff as far as the motorcycling for Bond, the jump particularly for Bond, which had to be rehearsed a number of times. Got to be at the right speed, got to be at the right gear going up to be, it's 45 feet up with a 14 foot drop at the top. You know, it's
like
a big jump
from the audience, to be fair.
Absolutely. Really, and of course they're filming it with a drone, so the drone flies over the top of it and you get to catch the shot from the other side. So, you know, that would have had to have been a crane shot, and there's safety issues as far as that's concerned. So from a drone point of view, the drones are perfect for this type of action. So him on the bike, he also doubles Cyclops on the bike as well, incidentally.
Yeah.
Paul. And then you've got JCR, Jean-Charles Rousseau, who is the other double for Daniel, who does a lot of the physical fights and doubling throughout the movie. And of course, the driving is down to the usual team of Mark Higgins and Ben Collins and that sort of stuff. And although, you know, impressive, I think one of those, I don't know, it just maybe it needed something else. It just needed something. There was this incredible chase, and then they end up at the train station, and then nothing happens after. I go, oh, really? Where's the rest? Where's the people chasing after you? Where's all of this stuff? I was expecting the world to come careering down, you know?
Did anybody die? I don't even know.
Did anybody die? I mean, you know, no. We don't know these things. Did any of those bullets actually make any contact? It looked like they didn't make any contact at all. The Gatling guns on the front of the DB5 firing thousands of rounds per second and just, you know, killing fruit and melons going everywhere. Yeah, so, you know, that sequence itself, I would like to think that that's the end of the DB5. I don't really want to see it again for some time. If it happens to be on a in a picture on a wall somewhere, that would do, you know, like they do with all them's.
Yeah.
But I think the DB5 has had its day.
But it's the callback thing again. I don't think modern audiences are that desperate for it.
Unless you're a fan. You know, they're doing it for... you're a fan, they go, hey, look, I've just made a reference to The Spy Who Loved Me. And nobody else around you realised apart from you. Go, yeah, so what? Don't
but
do
the Bond
that.
Fans, you know. I'm sure they wouldn't be that bothered.
If that's kind of thing. How you please a fan, we've lost the fan base. The way to please a fan is to entertain them.
Yeah. I think so. I also think there's you know, there are moments in this film that make for terrific viewing. You know, there's a lot of downtime where you're worried about stuff or you're concerned, or obviously the people on screen are concerned, and there's a worry about this and there's a worry about the virus and there's a worry about blah blah. And then you get the Cuba scene, you go, oh, okay, this is fantastic. And that's brilliant. It's like a moment of you can relax now. We're going to go back to the thing we used to do. We're in safe hands.
Do you think that was added on, do you think?
Oh, absolutely added on. Yeah. Because I suspect that was a scene, I imagine that was an extra scene they had with Felix, really, at one time that probably didn't work. And then they came up with, I know, we'll kill Felix. And so they did that and then thought, oh, wait a minute, we're left with something else. So on the strength of that, you know, Daniel's asked Anna Darmus to come in and do this piece, and she's brilliant. It really does make a massive difference to the film, and I think that sequence itself, and again, beautifully shot, very well done, and the action sequence in that is terrific. And again, we should really compliment a couple of people here. Munyara Mula is Ana de Armas's double for the physical fight. So when she's up against the three guys, that's her doing that. Anna does a great deal of it, but also from some of those shots, they do that as well. And then another girl called Marie Morom, who's German, and she doubles Nomi, Lashana Lynch, throughout this. So that, you know, the taking Valdo, who's doubled by David Newton, and swinging him from one side to the other to get rid of him. Also, that fall onto the car, incidentally, when she drives into the scaffolding.
Yeah.
That he's done that for real. There's no wire on that. He's literally falling from that onto the bonnet of that car. So very, very impressive, I must admit. But there are moments like that when afterwards, when, you know, he said, you were excellent. Thank you very much. Oh, you were pretty good too. Great. Look me up next time. Oh, there's the cigar. And they go. And if the credits had have rolled then, I'd have gone, do you know what? That was pretty good. You know, I enjoyed that. And then,
an hour and 4 minutes probably as well.
You've then got to go from that to the boat sequence. And again, underwater, very complicated underwater as well. But, I mean, they...
Decent fight with the CIA guy.
Magnusson.
How did he know I was going to be there?
Yeah, they're impressive. Again, done for real, you know. Yeah. Edited in such a way that, I mean, they're very fast movements. Of course, he then goes out through the door and down the steps, you know, and lands in a heap at the bottom where Felix is. So... You know, all of that type of physical action is very impressive, and you would expect nothing less. You know, those type of action scenes, you want them to be done real, and they are. And those fights that Olivier is bringing in and Patrick Vaux is arranging, these are the type of fights that work for Daniel's Bond. It's a different era, it's a different time zone, it's a different timeline, and yet you know, the producers continue to meddle with time loops, and they started by having bloody Judi Dench's M in Casino, which she should never have been there in the first place. So that it just doesn't work. She's not his M. She's Pierce's M. But he's at the end of his career, and then all of a sudden at the start of another career, still M? How does that happen? I'm confused. So, you know, they made that confusion and made it complicated right the way through. But, you know, what can you do? You have to make the best of what you've got, I suppose.
She's such a good actress. I think that was part of the thing, that she elevates the material, doesn't she? You know,
Dench.
They wanted a familiar face, I think, maybe. I don't know, to bridge it. Because they just had that and David Arnold and I suppose Martin Campbell coming back to have that transition.
There's no, you know, they've got the same. Tanner's not in that one, is he? Or he is, but he's played by somebody else.
No, he comes in Quantum.
Quantum.
Amazingly, yeah.
There's no Q in that either. So there's no Scooby-Doo team, right? The Scooby team, they're not set up. And yet M then continues to be the same M right the way through. And I go, what am I confused?
Yeah.
And she dies at the end of Skyfall. So I don't know. It's all very confusing. I think they take their own goalposts and they go, right, we're going to have them here today. No. I said here. Let's put them over there. Let's move the goalposts a bit. And I suppose with your own franchise, you can do that. But you have to look at it in a slightly different point of view when people go, do you know, you can't meddle about with these things. And you keep, you know, it's a different timeline completely. And yet let's have lots of references to previous films, i.e., the Aston Martin, for instance. You don't need that anymore. Let's get rid of it. Let's do something else.
There's a lot of deaths of the main characters, like we said.
Oh. Yeah, people dying.
There's obviously Vespa. It starts with Vespa, which is in the story, and that's fine, and that's good.
Yep.
Obviously, Quantum's the best, so that doesn't have one. No, Skyfall.
Mathis,
I'm only joking. What's that?
That's Mathis.
Mathis, yeah, that's true.
Mathis. Of course, what we're talking
Mathis,
about. Yeah, right.
Funeral, and I like that. Funeral in a dumpster. That's right.
Yeah. I wonder who. Any stunts in that? Craig was like, I want to do this myself.
I'll do it. I'll chuck him in. But yeah, there is a reoccurring theme of death and destruction.
Spectre, no.
Good film.
There you go. Right, there we go. That's good.
You see. One. Super. Jobs are good.
I think we've said this before, but if it was written in reverse and you're going to kill Bond, anything's off. Anything, you can do anything you want now. Killing Felix and Blofeld, it's immaterial, you know, it's secondary, isn't it? Having the kid is the other big thing, which seems to get lost in all of it.
Yeah, but it's in the book, Tom. No, it's in the books.
It's in the books.
It really isn't.
It's not in the books, no. It's suggested, I think, is the phrase.
I think you could do a one-off with him having a kid, perhaps. It's just, where do you go from then? You can't
look
have
who's talking.
Doing Bond with a kid. I was being facetious when I said about in the books. I don't buy it at all. If Bond has a kid, that's the plot. That's the be all and end all.
That's the story. Yeah, you can't just add it partway
through. Exactly. Yeah. License to Kill. The plot is that Felix Leiter gets maimed and his wife dies. So we go on a revenge mission. You know, and we get the greatest Bond film of all time. So how Felix Leiter dying is not the main thing.
Yeah.
James Bond's biggest villain of all time dying is not the main thing. How James Bond having a kid is not the main thing. We'll kill James Bond instead. It's a shambles. It's like Hollyoaks when it was really trying. Honestly,
wasn't expecting that transition. Bear with.
Hollyoaks was trying to get like viewers in, and they were trying to get all the student viewers. They had Silas Blissett Murder Week, and they basically killed someone off every day to try and build the ratings up. And that is what James Bond has done. They've just done Silas Blissett Murder Week to just see how can we build up the rating. Let's kill a few more off.
Do you mind if I just Google Hollyoaks to find out what this is?
Gained a lot of viewers now.
I think, you know, from a Hollyoaks point of view, obviously they've saved themselves a great deal of money by knocking off characters left, right and centre. But when you've got the lead character, the main character in a franchise, particularly as I found out fairly recently that this decision was made after Casino Royale premiere, Germany. I think it was the German premiere, and Daniel and Barbara are in the car going back to the hotel or wherever they're going, and he says, how many of these have I got to do? And she says, four. And he says, oh, okay. Oh. Well, I'll do them, but can I kill him off at the end? And she went, yep. What? That's it? There and then? Not even a, are you fucking kidding me? My father would have your ass, mate. I tell you, yeah. No, just a yes. And that bothered me. You know, that's the start of the franchise. And all of a sudden, a decision has been made right there that, yeah, at the end of it, you can do what you want. And I think that's alarming and is worrying.
That's the very reason why he's my least favorite Bond. Not because he's the worst Bond, but because for somebody to, A, have that power, but mainly have that arrogance to even come and suggest after one film.
That is an interesting point, because certainly none of the other actors were producers or in a position where they were credited as producers or able to have the same clout. Connery is probably the only exception as far as Never Say Never Again is concerned, because he had huge amounts of clout. Yeah. He'd made seven pictures or six pictures by that time, and the director had only done one. You know, so on the strength of that, he was a greater source of knowledge and knew about the character better than anybody else. But to suggest, I'd like to kill your character off, and for him to be given green light for that is very alarming.
Luckily, if Barbara continues, though, she'll double back on that, because no one will compare to Daniel for her.
Yes.
So she'll be ordering them about and, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Personally speaking, I think that is the case. I think that she's had her eye on Daniel for a very, very long period of time, professionally, you understand. Yeah. And, you know, as soon as she saw him walk down the corridor in Elizabeth with that gown on, she went, this is the guy. And all of a sudden, that was it. Nobody else. That was it. And as soon as he's taken the role, and he has been a massive part of her life ever since. And I think she's going to find it very, very difficult to replace him, even though she knows she has to. And she knows that they have to do something completely different and go back to, you know, give us a string of Roger Bonds for a while.
Yep.
Just, you know, let's go back to having some bloody fun. Which is there any chance of having a laugh and leaving the cinema going, that was fantastic, I'm going to see that again, I really enjoyed that, and I'm going to buy every different format it comes out on, and all that stuff that you do when you're a fan, you know?
The toy car.
So you just want to have a lot of fun with it. I also will say that I know we sidetracked the gags for a moment, but we go back to the action for a second. And a lot of, as we talked on earlier, a lot of the action, big gags in this picture, were in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what you tend to do with trailers is you give it, you know, you throw the kitchen sink at it if it's good, and if it's bad, because you will still want people to come in and see the movie. But then you see the movie and you realize, Jesus, there's loads of stuff here. And they've only shown the little, you know, some of the interesting bits or some of the best bits in the trailer, and the rest of it's equally as good. Well, there's a lot of action in this picture, and a lot of it turns up in the trailer.
Yeah.
And there isn't that extra step Norway that goes forward.
Chase, isn't there?
Yeah. I wanted to be able to go, oh, this is that little piece from the thing, and then you see the rest of this, and I'd seen it all. With YouTube footage from people who were on holiday in Matera at the time, the other bits and pieces and the chase stuff there, but also the Land Rover chases and all of that sort of stuff, and the Scotland sequence and all that sort of stuff. And I hadn't seen anything that I hadn't seen or that was hinted at in the trailer, and that was. That was, again, it was a shame, because that's not the way that they normally do that with Bond. They throw stuff at you and then go, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You wait till you see the movie, it's got all of this.
2 hours, 43 minutes as well, you would expect.
You'd think
something with it.
Exactly. Yeah. But I will say that Range Rover turning over in the chase was magnificent. And Martin Ivanov, who did that, was very pleased with it too. To get it looping right over the top of the road as the car passes under it. Fantastic. Yeah. And I've got a lovely photograph of him stood outside it after he'd rolled it with a big smile on his face. He was very, very pleased with himself, and rightly so. It's a great moment. And I don't think there's enough of them really in the picture, to be honest.
The stunts would seem better if they were in better context for us. And I know loads of fans love this film, and I don't want
No, I'm not taking anything away from the people who like it.
Yeah,
I find there'd been a thing not too fairly recently about people putting up their list of best Bonds and best this and bits and pieces. And, you know, No Time to Die turns up a lot in their top 10, if not in their top 2, you know? You're going, wow, really? that's interesting. It's way down the bottom with me with Die Another Day, and it stays there perfect. I'm glad it's got somebody to talk to. The fact that it's, you know, the two of them down there together, it's a bit lonely having Die Another Day down there on its own for so long. But what's interesting is that box office receipts, obviously it did terribly well at the box office. They're not all fans. You know, they're not fans of Bond movies. These are civilians. They're going in off the street. They're not fans. They're movie fans. They want to go and see Bond.
And they like it.
And they liked it, you know. And I was I saw a screening a couple of days after it came out in Leicester Square. The titles roll at the end and people are leaving. And then, you know, it said James Bond will return. The place was in uproar of laughter. And you go, because that's not what you want. They've gone, hang on. It says James Bond will return. Yeah. Ah, they had a big old laugh about it, you know. I don't know. I just think it's unnecessarily complicated for a Bond film. You want to go in, have an absolute magnificent roller coaster from start to finish.
Oh.
Love the character, all the quips, lots of girls, having, you know, lots of unprotected sex left, right, and center, as Bond would usually do. Is that Austin Powers? I mean, one of the other.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, you know, that sort of thing. And then you want to leave on a high. After it and go, that was sensational. Really enjoyed that. And I don't know. I've got it on DVD. I've got it there. I've watched it once with my father.
Oh,
and the last time he enjoyed it, but he said to me, it's not a Bond film, is it? And I said, no, that was the thing. He recognized it as being great fun. And that's Bond. But it's not a Bond movie. And I think that's
we'd be a bit more, you know, to be fair, that's a damn decent action film. Out of context as a one-off film. I don't know. Although it does presume some knowledge, doesn't it?
It does, but again, you know, you can take that premise with For Your Eyes Only, which I think kind of fits that genre. Sure. You take Bond out of the equation, put any character in, and it still works as a cracking film.
You're right.
It really does. And so if they had have considered that as an option, they'll maybe, you know, they said, we've got this other film that we're going to do as a Bond. And that's the one we can just put any character in there. Maybe it would have worked that way. Dad's normally pretty good. He'll watch something and doesn't matter what it is. If he likes it, he'll get into it. And he enjoyed it, you know? He enjoyed it the way that lots of people enjoyed it. But he made it very clear that's not a Bond film, though, is it?
No.
Because, you know, maybe he's got the Sean Connerys or the Roger Moores or the Pierces. You know, that's a Bond film. But this was very clearly not, as far as he was concerned. And I think there's a lot of people out there that think that. I'm one of them, unfortunately. But, you know, from an action point of view, it ticks a lot of boxes in a lot of places. I think there maybe could have been room for a touch more in places. They could have made use maybe of, instead of having that phenomenal set that they had for that layer that Safin has with all the people in the plastic Macs sweeping the water and all of that sort of stuff, you know, and they blew a bit up over there and then they blew a bit up over there, and they had one bloke falling in the water and one bloke falling in the water. And
let's have an army. Let's have a You Only Live Twice type thing.
Yeah, let's have an overall fight, you know?
Yeah, overall. Yeah.
Blues in the reds against somebody else. That's what you want. Yeah,
absolutely.
So that's where I am with it, I think. Can't wait till next time.
Well, yeah, to celebrate the 60th anniversary. He's died, but hopefully we'll learn that he is back from the dead. Or
dear.
I mean, yeah, where John, first of all, John Kell, where would you like the Bond series to go? Just in terms of stunts, what, I don't know, would you go Mission Impossible, or would you be a bit more subtle and have more sort of fist fights and things like that?
No, I wouldn't go fist fights. I'd go more Mission Impossible in a lot of ways. When I think of what sets Bond apart, I am no stunt expert, but I think, as I mentioned, GoldenEye and the tank driving through the driving through St. Petersburg. I love the idea of something that only Bond would do in the middle of society. And that's what I want more of. I'd absolutely be taking it back to doing jaw-dropping stunts, single missions. I want to see Bond come near to death, escape it in a way only Bond can, and then say a quip and brush it off like that. Yeah. Because that, to me, is what I watch when I grew up. It's what I watch now when I'm down and I'm like, I need to watch a Bond. That's what I want to watch. That is James Bond to me. Is it the Bond of the Flemings? Probably not. But even when you watch Sean Connery films, there is an aspiration
to what who he is as a person and the things he does and the stunts he does, that his films do, sorry, that I want to see more of. My thing with the Daniel Craig was helicopter aside, which I think is an extraordinary stunt. I think a lot of the stunts recently, taking Casino Royale out because I think that's a brilliant film, but I think the rest of them are good stunts, but they're not anything that I really don't see in other action films. I don't find them things that, oh, that's a Bond film. I say, oh, that's an action film, and they're impressive, but they don't have that Bondism, so to speak, like that's only ever going to happen in a Bond film. And I want to see a trademark like that again.
Yeah, I think so. I think, the benchmark was set with Bond back in the 60s, and you wouldn't have the Mission Impossible pictures you have today if it wasn't for Bond.
No.
And also an interesting point that Lee Sheward mentioned in your interview with him was that on Mission Impossible, he was sat with Greg Powell, the coordinator, and Tom Cruise came over and they were chatting about the setup train sequence. I think somebody had asked him, how much is this costing, this whole train setup? Because a huge green screen, 007 stage has been taken over, massive train, all this sort of bits and pieces. And the whole thing came to about $18 million just for this gag. You go, really? Yeah. And Lee said, I'd have done it for half the money for real. So what do you mean? So what do you, we've got facilities these days. We can tie you on and wire you on here and you'll be safe as houses. And he said he'd like to think that the seed was possibly sown there. Tom went, do you know, he's got a point here. We could save money and get things. Now, that's fine. Don't get me wrong. You know, there are moments in these pictures where you need to see the character there. You need to see the actor playing the character, doing the stuff for real, but not all the time. You know, you don't need to see him breaking an ankle like you saw Tom Cruise break an ankle jumping from one building to another. You don't need to see that because, you know, that's not something that should be done. Only the fact that Tom is the executive producer on the picture, and if he says he's going to do it, he's going to do it. You know, there's lots of stuff he does that you don't need to do. So I wouldn't want to see it go fully in that direction. But I would like to see it go in the direction of Mission Impossible from a sort of individual story point of view. This is the picture this we're doing. These are the characters. Here's the big opening thing. Here's the title sequence. Here's the plot. Here's your mission. Go and do it. Kill the bad guy. Do this. Fun. And then leave in a blaze of glory. And I think we need that after the 15 years we've had, not so much with Casino, but certainly with the rest up and down in various stages, and the fact that they've been so long between films. They were churning movies out every 2 years, so long.
I mean, Barbara's already going on the journey of Macbeth with Daniel Craig, so goodness knows
it's not going to be immediate. She's not looking for anybody at the moment, so it may be a couple of years down the line, and then if we do get it going, I'd like to think that it would be every 3 years, maybe a push, but I don't.
Every three years.
I'd settle for that, you know.
Bless you.
2 years was amazing because you knew they'd finish, you'd see one film, they'd be filming it whilst you were watching it, and then the next year it'd be out the phone. You go, this is fantastic, I love this.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
When I miss it terribly.
Tomorrow Never Dies, like, to think how many obstacles and how quickly that had to be made, how many script changes.
Yep.
And then, World Is Not Enough, sorry, no, that's it now.
Churning them out. It's a machine.
A little bit more.
Churning out the Bond movies because we can do it. We've done it for years. We know what we're doing here. Here's another one. Here's another one. Here's another one. You go, this is fantastic. All right, you have some good ones. You have some bad ones. You make some hits. Yeah, you have some misses. But I'd rather see them all and go and make my own mind up as opposed to waiting 9 years for this and 6 years for that and 5 more years for the next one.
And if the actor's on board and the films don't have to be quite so connected, it does become the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Because, I suppose Quantum came out fairly soon. Some might say too soon. You know, they didn't do enough preparation after it. Mm-hmm. And then there's 3 years between Skyfall and Spectre, notwithstanding that it took a bit of persuading to get Mendes back and Craig. They still managed to do it within 3 years, didn't they? So there's got to be some way. I just don't think they've even decided. They don't even know where they're going to go with it, do they? I really don't believe that.
Michael G. Wilson was writing Quantum on the set of Casino Royale.
Yeah.
He was writing it as a start of a revenge thriller. Now I'm contradicting my point a bit in a sense, because I'm not a massive fan of it and I feel like it did go in the wrong direction. But it's the idea that there was a bit of
they had an idea.
We're in a space now where the exec producer of Eon is, as opposed to looking for a Bond, gallivanting, producing
in between poker sessions, is writing the next movie. Yeah,
I just can't. Producing Shakespeare for the actor that. What planet do we live on? The fans waited 6 years for a Bond film.
Yeah,
blown up. I'm ready.
And then you compare that with Diamond.
In a nutshell,
the only way they could get him back was. He had that, massive, was it 1.25 million salary?
Yeah,
shitloads of money. He could do a Shakespeare. He could direct his own Shakespeare. But that wasn't what the United Artists wanted. It was sort of, it's the opposite of what's happening here.
Well, I mean, they'd also signed somebody else.
Signed John Gavin. Like, sorry, we're carrying on here without you.
We're going with a big fat Scotsman, mate. I'm so sorry. I'm afraid. Keep the money, though. That's all right. Oh, cheers. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, you live in hope that they're somewhere down the line, somebody's going to see sense and go, right, we've got to grab this by the scruff of the neck, shake it and bring it back to where it should have been.
Yeah.
And carry on where we left off back in 1989, or indeed 1999.
Yeah, 1999, I'll settle on that.
Yeah, 99.
But I also don't think that they need... This whole, they have to be very similar to the books, or they need to go back to the books. The Bond film universe is 60 years old. It's so much bigger and longer than the duration of the books.
That's it.
I'm not having a go at the books, but it's so far beyond that. And cinema is a totally different art form. We're not making things to sort of, for a sort of bedtime story, or reading a book at a beach. This is now a sort of massive franchise where we have to wow the audience. We have to show them things they haven't seen. And it's sort of like, it's great to go back to the book in terms of the characterization. And, we all would like it to be a bit, No Time to Die just went too far. It felt more too fantastical for me compared to some of the other Daniel Craig ones.
The other thing, just again, from my point of view, but what was alarming for me as well was the fact of how unbelievably positive all the production people, the actors, the director, the producers, they were so excited about this film. We don't know what's happening at the end of the movie, and they're not telling anybody, but they were so excited for everybody to see this, because this was, it's the great send-off to Daniel Craig after his tenure as Bond, and we're so excited for people to see this, and we know you're going to love it. And they kill the character. You go,
yeah.
Which part of this did you think I was going to really enjoy? I'm sorry, I'm confused. This character that I've dedicated over 40 years of my life to, and you just blow him up at the end of the picture like it's the most powerful thing in the world.
You just killed James Bond.
And then, is that who it was? And then,
is that who it was?
And then you play a Louis Armstrong track that shouldn't even be in the movie in the first place. So, you do all of these things. Oh my God, what's going on? It's confusing. I don't understand it. But the positivity behind everybody, it gets everybody going. You go, wow, if they're positive about it, we're so excited. We can't wait for you to see this movie. We know you're going to love it. It's going to be fantastic. We are really pleased with it. Yeah, Daniel, how do you think? I'm really pleased with it. I think it's a very, very, it's a great. Rami, what? Oh, sensational. We loved it. Yeah. It's great to make. I'm really excited by it. You see the movie, go, are they talking about the same film? I'm just really confused by the whole thing, this positivity trip where people are obviously going to go, I'm not sure you should have done that, I think you've made a mistake. They don't care, because box office says you've made a great movie, box office return says this is very successful, well done you, but there's something much deeper than that, and I don't think you can mess around. You can't mess around with, there's some things that people need, need it psychologically, they you can't just dive in and, right, we'll just get rid of that. We'll start afresh with something else. Can't just do that. You have to have, there's got to be that fluidity between this character who's been here in various other guises and various actors, and this guy who's taken over as the role. You can't just disappear off on a tangent. Yeah, all right, the timeline changed because the story changed. They suddenly got Casino, and they had to have Bond as the start-off story. Fine. But don't mess about with it at the end. Don't have a full arc. You know, he's retired once already.
Novice to death. Yes.
Oh, my word. Anyway, I should get off the soapbox. And I'm going to have a long lie down because I'll only get myself worked up.
Sorry, mate.
I'll have to ring the Samaritans again. They've hung up on me twice already this week. So I wouldn't ring them again. Hello? Oh, God, it's you again, is it? Yes, it's me. Right, click.
Sorry, it's a bit of a black joke, but a dark joke. But maybe that's who Craig should have rang while he was on the island.
Yes, yeah. We'll come and get you within the hour.
Yeah. We have all the time in the world.
Have you tried the auto clap?
Yeah, hello. I've tried everybody else. I don't know who else to turn to. You're my only hope.
Oh.
Another great franchise. We've finally come to the end of this discussion, but we're at this point where we've had these films, and you know, there are a lot of stunts in the Craig films. Do you think they'll be remembered for their stunts as much as some of the other films, though, Steve?
I think they started quite well, as we've just discussed. I thought Casino Royale and actually Quantum of Solace got some really quite good stunt work in them. Quantum of Solace gets dismissed very quickly, and I think it's a little bit unfair. Yeah. But I think that the stunt work in that is. That fight sequence where they're all hanging on cables and things, I think it's really terrific. I don't think the Daniel Craig era will be remembered, for its stunts like the rest of Bond, because it will be remembered for a miserable guy who hated his job and wanted to retire and then, you know, ended the way he ended, let's say. So I think it's a bit of a shame. I don't think they'll be remembered for their set pieces, even though, Casino Royale, again, had some pretty impressive set pieces. And actually, so Spectre's got some decent set pieces. Mm. But it just feels like the heart wasn't in it in the same way. So, you know, those films, they made lots of money. I know lots of people enjoyed them, and I think that's brilliant. I'm hoping that with the next films, because I'm hoping they'll want to change again, it's time for a change, we can go back to something with a bit more, a lighter touch and some fabulous stunt work that blows us all away. We can but hope. If Bond's alive, I mean, I don't know what's happening with him.
You want a bit of humour in your stunts as well. You know, the John Glenn films, there's a little bit of humour sometimes in and amongst it.
Yeah, there's no reason you can't do a film with really good drama and still have humour, because it's called License to Kill.
Yes.
Which gets the perfect balance. I mean, it's got real drama. You're really sucked into what the characters are doing and going through. Bond is probably arguably the most realistic performance from anyone with Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
You're really drawn into what happens with Felix, with his wife. And yet the film still has a lightness of touch throughout, where you get wonderful moments of humour. The scene with Q and Pam, where they're introducing each other and, you know, he's my uncle and whatever. I mean, that is one of the funniest scenes, I think, in Bond, because it's so believable. It's not just a one-liner. It's a scene born out of the reality they're in, and it just makes me laugh so much. So, you know, if you get a good director and you get a good script... So for that, you need good writers. I hope they can find some. Then you could have a great Bond film.
Would you have Martin Campbell back?
I would. I mean, I know he's obviously getting on now.
I think he said he would do it.
But... Yeah, I think he's a terrific director, especially for Bond. He gets action. We saw that we talked about Goldeneye and the where he drops the sound on the bungee jump, and that's a real... That's a director's touch, I think, to go in the edit and say, actually, yeah, let's not have any music here. Let's just let it breathe, like they did with The Spy Love Me. He's great at capturing close-ups of actors in the middle of intense action scenes. You look at all those shots of Brosnan where you just catch him as he just backs into a wall and he just sort of, you know, just a tiny facial expression. And I think Campbell does that well. He did it well in Casino Royale as well. He gets those little subtle moments. And I think action films need that, especially as John will tell us, a lot of the scene is stuntmen. So if you can get little cutaways of the actor that really fit in and just add their little touch to it, I think he's brilliant for that. So I'd definitely have him back. I'd love him to do another Bond film. And while Casino Royale started a direction I wasn't massively keen on, as a standalone film, had they not stuck on that trajectory, I think it, in many ways, is stand out brilliant. I just don't like it so much because of where it took the series later. But but I would definitely like more stunts, you know, and as little CGI as is possible, because that's what makes Bond different from everything else. You know, Mission Impossible trying to take its throne. I think Bond needs to fight back.
Oh, yes, Steve. A rallying call. Brilliant. Right, well, this has been an absolutely epic slog through the stunts of the James Bond franchise. I'm sorry, John Orty, we didn't discuss Never Say Never Again and Casino Royale 1967. I apologise for that.
I don't know what's wrong with you.
Maybe on a bonus, you know, sort of filler episode for the diehards, who knows.
Certainly.
But yeah, I mean, you could go on. There's so many things we haven't mentioned. There's so many little individual fights and stage scenes that are incredible. And there's minutiae within those stunts that certain people did that don't get the credit. And John has tried to identify some of them for us, which has been brilliant, because there are untold stories. You'll have heard of the Rick Sylvesters, the BJ Worths, perhaps. But, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who've worked on these. And the stunt coordinators themselves aren't perhaps too well known. But, you know, we've spoken to Lee Sheward, we've spoken to Sid Child, and we're going to speak to more of these stunt people because they're brilliant. And I love their individual stories and how they came into these films and how they've made the mark on the franchise. And it's that sense of a Bond family as well. And I think we've just about got it. We're hanging on for dear life at the moment. And of course, as the years go on, people get older, retire and die, of course. But let's just have a little return to the ways of the stunts in our James Bond films, because if you ask the person on the Clapham Omnibus, I bet you it's in the top three things they'd say why they want to watch a Bond film at the cinema. I assure you. So let's have them back.
Yeah.
Quite right, too.
And thank you, guys, for having me. And John, so fascinating to hear. Your knowledge is extraordinary. I mean, you know everybody's name, and I just think that's phenomenal. Oh, you even knew my name. I mean, that was amazing.
I know, right? Don't say I don't do my research here, you know. I need to know people. I need to know them. We'll do a deep dive. That's what I
do. We have people everywhere.
We have people everywhere. In the Auto Club.
Yeah. Take care, and good evening, everybody.
Really, no.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.